energy, mass, matter, velocity, kinetic energy, temperature are all things that are in sort of common use at school and in popular science magazines, and they've got a sort of grade. You have to really scratch your head and think, why are we using that subset of ideas? And well, some of my hypothesis is that they're the sort of ideas that you can annotate a cartoon with or annotate a simple exam question with, and so we've sort of directed ourselves towards this subset of ideas, and which is all okay. It sort of creates a little universe that you read from New Scientist to your school textbook, and it's a secure universe. Occasionally, if you learn a bit more or study a bit more or read deeper books, you come up against other terms which are a bit more head-scratchy, a bit more vague, and generally they're vague because they involved either something like a matrix or group theory or an integration, which is sort of just a little bit above the sort of thing that you can normally talk about. So you can imagine a news reader, a news editor, people editing the news, they'll carefully go through papers and know what 99% of the population will understand and feed the news there. And of course, if you get your information only from newspapers, you'll become the creation of what your editor is. So your editor may know who you are, but it also creates who you are. So my friend Julian Ham, I think he's still in the Isle of Man in the United Kingdom, right across the other side of the planet, said, g'day, as you do. He said, can you offer any insight on the term action, the action on an object, as opposed to energy? What's the difference between those two things? Now, in general, you couldn't ask general people about that, because action, well, that's not one of its defined terms. Go home. It's not part of customary knowledge. That is the knowledge that we teach people so that they can operate in society. Action. So action, wait for it. There's something called a Hamiltonian. A very interesting thing. Sort of the things which, sort of the higher grade, I suppose, professional Lagrangian, Lagrange points. Hamiltonian goes into classical mechanics, starts talking about chaos and quantum mechanics. There are all these things which are just a little bit out of our grasp. And action, and a lot of these things straddle modern science. So they've got a term in ancient science. A lot of the terms that we rely upon or talk about are the way that was conceived in, recent history, Lagrangian, and then they've got a new life. And really, they are quite actually accessible, but you have to play around with computers or watch them or look at equations, and you get a sort of a different story. So this is Peter Hill Explains, and I'm discussing things scientific, and this may be too high for many of your audience, but I'm trying to make something which is sort of accessible to Julian and a few other people. Just a few stories about Julian Ham. We've never actually met. I don't think we've ever spoken, but we've emailed back and forth. So when you are interested in explaining things scientific back and forth, you pick people. I think there was a fantastic Peruvian educator. I've forgotten his name, but he they survive a certain amount of time before the practicalities, the economic. It's not a paying job, and so this person he went off to be a translator for an American medical school, and Julian Ham has gone off in as a communicator for the nuclear industry, and he tells me now into leadership management training. But previously, in a previous life, he used to promote something called the furry elephant, and this is basically a story, an insight, an educational insight that when and the story goes that a blind person was taken to a zoo and said, "Do you want to touch an elephant?" And they touched the elephant and they said, "Hey, it's not furry." And it's a simple little story of the name of the furry elephant. Of course, if it was a mammoth, it would be furry, but it's not furry. The general thing is that most creatures, large, you touch a cat, a dog, everything's furry. So you make it sort of assumptions, and so things have to be explained and deconstructed, and you've got to spend time with people. Now, I suppose the interesting thing is that I'd been corresponding about how do we explain this feature, or with Julian, or if he's put a good flash animation up on his website where it's actually stepped people through, and I think it's good. I'll tell you, good one, mate. But then nothing complex. But I did go to a teacher training, probably the last teacher training I was involved in, because you have to be. There's a bit of politics about who gets trained and stuff like that. So the last in service I had, probably 5 years ago at James Bruce, which is a selective school. This person began explaining, and he said, "Let me tell you about this fantastic website." Oh, lean forward, I'm interested. And there's a lot of fantastic insight websites. Why they work and don't work is as fascinating as anything. And he said, it's called the Furry Elephant. Oh, I didn't put my hand up or say, "Oh, look, I know all about this." And then he proceeded to correctly describe the history of the furry elephant. And a bit of an insight of a few things he added to it. And then afterwards I sort of said, "Oh, look, I know Julian. I've at least corresponded with him." And there was this icy look in terms of, look, this is the level of, it wasn't open knowledge. It was, this is my, threat, I suppose. You know, this is my sales point. And I don't muck with it, which is rather unfortunate because we can have a deeper conversation. That's just more of a story about how he's. Julian's fairly famous in the education world amongst science teachers of a certain depth, I suppose, and age. And of course, recently, as happens, the stars don't align. And I've been looking at science teaching, developing lessons and resources, putting lesson plans up on the web in a resource section, developing worksheets, and I'm experimenting with systematic podcasting as a way of getting through, because I think podcasting is possibly a really good method, because students can listen to it, they can switch it off if they don't want to, they can go through a library. You can make some interesting points in it, and you can improve. There's a whole lot of things behind podcasting, that's the sort of the Peter Hill Explains aspect of it, where I'm developing, and I'll catch up with Julian and tell him all the science of my fantastic heart operation. They put a piece of supercarbon. When I say supercarbon in my heart, this is special carbon. It's a special chaotic graphite, which is flexible yet as strong as diamond, and lasts for 10 million years. And they've put it in my heart, and I'm going a million times better than I was before, but still searching forward and exploring forward on ways to teach and stuff like that. Let's get back to it. So Julian's question was action. It sounds a bit like energy, but it's not. What's the story with action? Julian, listeners, let me start. There's action is a term which was in use in the ancient world. You'd apply an action to an object, and that action would put motion into that object. And the amount of motion in that object was called suppose, the inertia or the... and eventually this transformed through manipulation of Newton into momentum. But so there's the ancient world, apply an action. So an action is something that you obviously that you do, which is done to an object to make it move. And that's the old view of the word action. So if you read sort of old Descartes and Newton stuff, the word action comes up. Of course, it's in Latin in most cases. I can remember Descartes also, Cartesian stuff. René Descartes is in Latin as well. This term action, so action was up there as in science, in Aristotelian view of the action being put into an object. So you... action is a bit like energy, and it's put into an object. Now, the word energy, ergo, means work, and it's work inside an object. So that was also an ancient term. The ancient term got shaped as it put forward. Now, we've got these ancient terms moving forward. We've also got... the ancient term of matter, which comes from matter. The Latin is associated with mother and origin. The origin of it, matter, was also associated, basically, was from the Greek term wood. So, again, Aristotle had a way of describing things so they could be handled logically. So he had... four causes, which he said, if you knew about this, you knew about the object. So one cause was the form of three-dimensional shape, and this is a blessing, but a horror, because it's still taught at school. So people believe that things have a surface and a shape and a boundary, sort of like a mold. Now, quantum mechanics breaks the mold. It doesn't have surfaces, and it has objects which can slide through each other, unlike our physical existence. But our physical view of the world is that things, the first cause is form. Second form is the stuff inside the form, the matter inside the form. Then there's other causes, the cause to how it's made and how it's used. So one cause, say a table, one cause would be the carpenter, and another cause would be the use of the table. And so essentially this is sort of like if you had a file on an object, you could put everything under these files, which is sort of a deconstructed view compared to, I'll just go on about it, but Plato's theories of the form, he said that forms were concepts. So a concept of a table was a more sort of similarly closer to artificial intelligence. The forms, so theory of the forms, look it up. So he said, potted version of it, that before you're born, you're in a universe, a spiritual universe, and you encountered the perfect table or the perfect chair. And so when you came down on Earth, you knew what a table was, but you knew somehow it was also imperfect. So this theory of the perfect, and of course this is a pre-scientific thought to deal with concepts, conceptual programming, which we're beginning to get in artificial intelligence rather than object oriented, which is very much linked down to Aristotle, the theory of the form. So, of course, the form allowed us to think of what the perfect society is. Our political science, our communism is example of a form of society. And so we have conflicts of forms. So that's all coming up. When it comes down to matter, matter had sort of aspects of a quantity, but also is... also coming, the way that matter's come forward to us through the ages, and I'll talk about this, and it is relevant, is more that matter, the amount of matter in an object is, like, can be counted, like a shopping list. So you've got some shopping, you can look at the receipt and look at what's there. The amount of matter in a sugar cube can be accounted for by the number of carbon atoms and oxygen atoms and elements. So the ancient ideas churn through, and I'm beginning to see, the more I read, the link to it there. So matter, the conservation of matter in a chemical equation means that the actual atoms are conserved on either side. And then there's another idea of the conservation of mass, and that has... mass is something which didn't exist in the ancient world and had a rather unusual origin. And the reason I'm talking about the ancient world is to give you the idea of these ancient concepts being transformed through popular use in science. And I'll talk a little bit about energy as well. But mass. So, look, there's a fairly complex piece of history of people. There was a stage when Constantine broke up the church as a function of the state into five equally powerful jurisdictions. There was Jerusalem, Antioch, Constantinople, Rome. These were equal, and then Byzantine Constantinople was the more powerful. And as Constantinople's power waned, the Roman Church became, I suppose, needed to get its own army and support, and it came from a culture of I don't want to exactly say fraud, but they'd make up documents and try and do deals, a bit like a used car salesman. So part of the dealing was telling Charlemagne's grandfather that, hey, we've got this document here which says that Constantine awarded us all these lands. Come in, come down and save us. And so there was all these sort of doubtful documents, and so the church was going through trying to deal with these a few centuries after this all transpired. So this is the donation of Constantine is one example. There are many examples of dubious documents, and as a response to this dubiousness and the sort of rediscovery of the ancient works, Aristotle, the great thinker, there's a reintroduction of systematic thought into the church, and against this absolute term. I think there is a story for it. We're getting to mass. There is this conflagration, and it is interesting to read, especially when you go through the origin, the impact of the Bulgarians, and a whole heap of other factors involved in it. The long story is that Giles of Rome, there is an Italian name for him, but I'll use the English name. Giles of Rome was dealing with a heresy to do with the application of Aristotle to the transmutation. This is the conversion of the body and blood of Christ to the bread and wine to the body and blood of Christ. So wine, blood, how could that possibly happen? How can you get conservation of matter in that? And so he came up with an idea saying, well, there's another concept which he called mass. And this somehow was a numerical abstract quantity which was conserved even though the matter could be different. It's really hard to follow in detail. We go underneath that and look at... Newton had a feeling of what mass was when he was describing things. He tried to describe it in density. He said he basically reverse engineered the mass out of the density equation, that the density equals the mass divided by the volume, and he got things out. But at the end of the day, he said, oh, look, I refer back to the origin of mass. I refer back to Giles of Rome. And so this is something, again, you don't pick out, it's not taught, but you do pick out if you read some excellent US textbooks, university textbooks. So they go back and have asides to discuss this, and then you follow it up and push it across. So so we come up to the ancient view of action. Action is somehow an idea to what you do to an object to add momentum to it. And so it is related a bit to energy. But now we have the a reuse of the word action, a more a scientific group of action, which is up in the professional realm of physics, where we're not looking at the cartoon pictures, we're looking at more a basic rails or things which are conserved, which describe how a system evolves. So you really can't put down a system on a piece of paper and write a simple question about it, which is sort of fundamentally why it's more advised. So the modern definition of action, and we'll have to do a few things. I wanted to stop off and talk about potential and kinetic energy, and we have to get them together. So the term for potential energy is going to be capital V. The term for kinetic energy, which I'll again do another podcast and describe that in more detail, is T, capital T, not for temperature. So this is one of the things about using terms in different fonts and different contexts as quantities, and keeping them separate. So there is another formulation which is describes the system. So we say that the one thing that we do say is that the kinetic energy plus the potential energy is the same. But for a system, there is this term called L, Lagrangian. And the Lagrangian, you'll just have to trust me on this, and I'll have to talk about it more deeply. The Lagrangian is L equals T minus V. And so the V you can sort of set for an arbitrary amount, so all Lagrangians can be set up and down by a certain amount. But T is also frame dependent, because your velocities are relative to an absolute coordinate. But Lagrangian is T minus V, and there is a thing we can solve for a Lagrangian. It's not a very useful number, but you can minimize it and do a whole series of things. So we have a new and Lagrangians have a unit of energy, because Lagrangian is T, which is in joules, and V, which is in joules. V's is for an individual object, its position in a potential energy field. For multiple objects which have, say, mutual potential energy. So this is when you get fields, say two charged particles of equal charge orbiting each other. You know, that's a very difficult thing to do. You have to describe the field in relative coordinates. So Lagrangians is basically the physics of anything where it's more egalitarian. That's the best way I can describe it. So L's got units of joules, if you integrate the Lagrangian of a system, so Lagrangians are generally used for systems, so you can have the Lagrangian of the Earth-Moon system, or the Lagrangian of the Earth-Moon-Sun system, and there's Lagrangian saddle points and surfaces. Again, this is not cartoon science, this is more movie science, where you're trying to get the plot of what's going on. So if you integrate the Lagrangian over time, between two times, you get something called the action of that on that system. So we now, although action used to be applied from one object to the other, you have an action on a system. This is an observed system. So you're just looking at a system and you notice kinetic energy and its potential energy of all the particles, including the fields between the particles. You just clock that second by second and add that up per second. So initially get the Lagrangian at every second and multiply it by one, or then you take every half second, twice the number, and multiply it by half a second each. And so the more times you take it, the smaller you average it. And that integral technically is now called the action. And I'll give another podcast as to how you can use it and some other aspects and the origin of potential energy and kinetic energy. Why kinetic energy? I mean, there's, again, customary knowledge. Why is kinetic energy a half mv squared? Yeah, and that's what the T is the sum of every particle, its mass times a half v squared. Now, v is something which has existed for all time. We've always understood what velocity is. But mass is something which has emerged from the turmoil of the 8th century, 9th century church, Giles of Rome. Please look it up. So that's the mathematical term for action. So action has units like energy. The energy is in joules. That's force times distance, and that's the amount of work available in an object. So a TNT will have so much energy available in it. Or when it explodes, that energy is still available, but it's kinetic energy moving. So that's a definition of energy, and that just flows out of Newton. But for action, it's got units related to energy, and it's got joule seconds, which is sort of really interesting when you go, because that's again the same joule seconds. I have to really think about it, but that is suspiciously like H is joule seconds, that's right. Sorry, H is Planck's constant, also in joule seconds. Look, this is just off the top of my head. I wasn't expecting that. Get a frequency and you multiply it by H. So E equals HF. F is to the minus 1, so joule seconds to the minus 1. So Planck's constant, I'll have to really think about it, it's just off the top of my head, is in the same units as action. So this is a really sort of a deep, interesting aspect. But again, it's not covered in normal science, because normal science has a sphere of basically being able to be examined. And this type of stuff requires a little bit of additional time. And no one's got really additional time in our rushing world. We just want to think enough to make the next purchase or to make the next product. We don't want to have people thinking too much. So I hope this is worthwhile, and that people listening to it can pick up little bits, and it's fertile ground for further podcasts. So hello from Sydney, and hello Julian in the Isle of Man, and I hope we can keep on working together. Bye for now. In the meantime, keep on doing science and working out how to teach it.